If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hi, I'm Grant Wall, and welcome to the Planet Football Podcast, where I go in-depth with the most intriguing people in the world of soccer. Just a quick reminder, it's a huge help if you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Today, SI's Brian Strauss joins me to talk about Toronto's chance at history in CCL, Sunday's electric Atlanta NYCFC game, Brian's argument about why FIFA should expand the 2018 World Cup, and why Gigi Buffon has a future in country music after his hit single, Trash Can for a Heart. Onward. Let's bring in Brian Strauss from Washington, D.C., where the weather is slightly better than it is here in flash-flooding New York City. Brian, how are you, my man?
I would have to go outside to really experience that. So that doesn't happen.
Sorry about your Washington Capitals to start off.
I saw a couple people tweet something like, you know, after they lost, I don't remember even which game it was, but someone said, oh, that's so on brand. You know, the Capitals are so on brand right now. And it's actually not, because typically they blow leads, right? You know, they're famous for blowing two-game leads and blowing home game sevens. And you know, you need a lead to blow a lead. You know, you need to get to game seven to blow a game seven. So they're collapsing even earlier than normal. And so it's quite interesting to see. So it's a little change of pace.
So I'm actually going to be out next week for the podcast. So let's enjoy this one. I'm going to be in the wilds of Iceland for a few days for a story. More on that later. But lots to talk about in the soccer world.
You're going to go to the dentist. We've talked about this.
The national team coach of Iceland is a dentist.
Yes.
Heimir Hallgrímsson. I'm looking forward to seeing him. But in any case, there's still a lot of soccer going on in European club soccer right now. We're getting into the games that matter most, and even past them if you're talking about domestic leagues. And obviously MLS in full swing, Champions League for UEFA and CONCACAF. But I want to start with an MLS game from the weekend, Brian. Atlanta, NYCFC, two teams that are fairly new to the league, obviously, but have really, I think, helped raise the level of the league and how they're going about doing things. And this game ended up 2-2, national televised game on Fox. But for me, just a really fun game to watch. And I was wondering if you felt the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. It was everything you'd want out of a game, which is to, you know, be entertained and drawn in, you know, and absorbed for a couple hours to, you know, forget about the rest of the world. No, it was well played. It was high intensity. The speed of it was just really impressive. Not something that we're typically seeing from your average MLS game over the years. The atmosphere was wonderful. There were, you know, 45,000 fans there. At one point, they all had their phones. I don't know what the tradition is going on now in Atlanta or what the catalyst of this was, but toward the end of the match, you had all, you know, 40-plus thousand holding up their phones, and it was just a really neat effect. Maybe it was their phones. Maybe there was some kind of giveaway. I have no clue. But both Patrick Vieira and Tata Martino afterward, you know, said this was a really, really intense, high-level game. Greg Garza, I think, said it was like a national team game. Just the speed and the intensity and sort of the tactical chess moves and provocation and response was really impressive and fun to watch. And And, you know, you could stay positive and say this is a great sign for the league going forward. You could be cynical and say this is the exception that proves the rule. But either way, it was a good 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this as I know you don't want to make too much of one game, obviously, but I really do think at times I don't step back enough to say, like, the pieces have been put together in large parts of MLS for a noticeable improvement in the league and what it brings to the table. And yes, I realize there are plenty of stadiums around the league where there are more empty seats than the announced crowd would indicate. That was certainly the case at Red Bull Arena over the weekend here in Jersey. And yet, I liked the mix of this game in terms of players on the field for NYCFC in Atlanta. You had older stars like David Villa. You know, you had younger stars like Miguel Almiron, like Ezequiel Barco, the $15 million transfer teenager from Argentina who made his league debut for Atlanta. You had a lot of good American players like Garza and Nagby and Brad Guzan and Michael Parkhurst. It felt like a real game, you know? And I just remember yesterday looking at the broadcast, and then they're showing Patrick Vieira and Tata Martino on the sidelines, and you're like, this required some money. You know, Martino and Vieira are the highest paid coaches in the league. Barco obviously cost a lot of money. Villa, Almiron, Joseph Martinez. And yet you bring all those ingredients together, and I was on the edge of my seat.
Yeah, agreed. I have thoughts on all of that. I also, of course, since this is a topic I harp on, in terms of the product, the display, what we're watching, the fact that you turned it on and could tell immediately who was playing and tell immediately where you were. This is something that MLS continues to struggle with, and I think it plays a role in why the TV ratings are poor. You need recognition. And so when every team dresses the same and every stadium looks the same, you know, you're basically watching single entity soccer. And so to turn on the TV, oh, red and black stripes, that's Atlanta. Sky blue shirts, that's NYCFC. You could tell the branding around the stadium. You know, they're not just a tenant, you know, they're not part owners, but I mean, you know, Arthur Blank owns Atlanta and puts them at equal footing with the Falcons, and you can see the branding around the stadium. So all of that production value, then obviously the quality on the field, seeing guys like Ring and Tinnerholm, you know, Maxi Morales, you know, guys who aren't big names like Pirlo and Lampard were, but you see NYCFC going for quality over those big names, and what a difference that makes in the side. You see a coach like Tata Martino. If Bruce Arena could have figured out how to use Darlington Nagby or not to use Darlington Nagby, I think the U.S. is going to the World Cup. I think that was a huge factor in the losses to Costa Rica and Trinidad. But Tata understands how to use Darlington Nagby and understands that he's a complementary player. And when there's cover for him in midfield, that he can do some really nice things. The speed at which Miguel Almiron plays and the fact that he was sort of shifted up top. Right. So he could sort of drift wide, drift back, find spots. You know, he had cover behind him and then the freedom to sort of move and find the ball, depending on how NYCFC was pressing. That was just really impressive, intelligent soccer. And then when he has the ball at his feet, the speed at which he goes with players and the speed at which he makes decisions is so impressive. Atlanta is not a team. I mean, there are people who like the tiki taka and that's great, but Atlanta attacks and Atlanta takes space and Atlanta, you know, forces defenders into difficult positions on the front foot. And we're just kind of repeating, but it was just a lot of fun to watch. And I'm glad, you know, we always sort of talk about what games should we watch this week. I'm glad we picked this one. It was really enjoyable.
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence. Those two teams are the top two teams in the Eastern Conference of MLS right now. Before we get to the Toronto Chivas CONCACAF Champions League final, which starts on Tuesday, I actually want to talk about Toronto and Seattle in MLS. And I think this is a pretty direct result of them playing in Champions League, especially with Toronto and focusing on that. But Toronto and Seattle have made the final in MLS each of the past two seasons. And we just basically assumed, predicted that would be the case this season. And here they are in last place in the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference. You've got Toronto 14 points behind NYCFC, Seattle 13 points behind Kansas City. Granted, they haven't played as many games. It's a weird situation. You have teams that have played four games in the MLS season so far. You have teams that have played seven. But is that point difference, that gap, starting to be a concern for them?
I was actually wondering if Toronto, you know, has already kind of lost the shield. You know, if we're just at a point now where NYCFC and Atlanta and have already sort of cost themselves first place in the East. And my guess is they don't care. They shouldn't care. Their priority is 100% right. I mean, Greg Vanney fielded essentially a B team in Colorado this weekend and lost because he wants to beat Chivas on Tuesday. And that's what he should be doing. You know, I've said for a long time that six teams from each conference is too many. It's too easy to make the playoffs. I think Toronto will certainly appreciate the fact that they have that cushion this year. They will not have a problem making the playoffs, certainly, but first place may be gone for them. And so that means, you know, to get back to MLS Cup, Toronto is going to have to win the Eastern Conference, probably in New York or in Atlanta, and that'll be compelling. That'll be interesting to see if they can get that result on the road when they need it.
But let's talk about the CONCACAF Champions League final. We've got Toronto.
I'm excited.
Yeah, Toronto against Chivas, just the third time in the 10-year modern format of the CONCACAF Champions League that an MLS team has reached the final. And it's fair to say, isn't it, that Toronto's the favorite, right?
Yeah, I spoke to Greg Vanney a couple days ago about that. And he sort of laughed at the idea, of course, you know, and I agree. I mean, you know, it's the game is played on the field and you know, Chivas held New York scoreless over 180 minutes of soccer. And so, you know, New York had their chances, obviously. We all saw it, outshot them 20-1 in the second leg. But in the end, the ball didn't go in the net. And so, yeah, Toronto's not going to take anything for granted, nor do I think fans should. It's hard to say. I mean, it's a strange thing to see an MLS team on paper probably be better than a Liga MX team. It's a really, really strange thing. And so it's hard to sort of wrap your head around. But this is 180 minutes against a storied Mexican club, 90 of which are going to be in Guadalajara. The second leg is in Guadalajara. And so, you know, I don't think there are any favorites in this. I think it's knockout soccer and a lot can go wrong and a lot can happen. Toronto's got a few guys on the verge of suspension. So rather than say they're favorites, I would say this is the best chance an MLS team has had to win this competition by far. And that's saying something. And so we'll see if Toronto takes it.
Well, it's a great story. And, I've really enjoyed watching Toronto in the knockout rounds of CONCACAF Champions League against very good teams, like Tigres, like America, and really just approach it spot on. Every game, it seems like, and they've taken advantage of being at home in the opening game, built leads in those two series. And against Club America, they didn't have the late near collapse that they basically had against Tigres, where they eventually squeaked in thanks to that Jovinko free kick. But I just look at how Greg Vanney has approached all of this, how Toronto as a team has approached CONCACAF Champions League, and I think they've done everything almost perfectly to this point.
You've got, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a formula to this, right? And obviously, you know, money is part of it, but you have guys who've played a lot of big games. You have depth, right? I mean, you miss Victor Vazquez and Justin Morrow and some guys like that. And you've developed over time, over a 3 to 4 year plan, guys you can fill in and play. You've got tactical flexibility. We've seen now this group be together long enough where Vanny's been able to play in a few different ways. And you made an excellent point, and Vanney made the same point, that they've been able to build leads. He said we've had a lead in every series. And so there's this sort of consensus. This is why we have an issue with the playoffs, right? We talk about this every fall, how the MLS playoffs do next to nothing to award the higher seed that's earned an easier road in the playoffs. And MLS will come back and say, well, you know, you get the second leg at home, but that's not necessarily an advantage. And Vanney said essentially,
that playing the first leg at home has helped his team, that being able to go to Mexico with an – now, you've got to take the advantage. You've got to build it. But being able to go to Mexico with a lead has put his team in a far more comfortable position than it would have been the other way around.
I mean, that's fascinating to me. And I don't know if you heard Merritt Paulson on last week's interview on this podcast. When I asked him about the playoff format, he's on the competition committee. He certainly is talking up one-game playoffs instead of two legs.
Well, and I'm against that too. One-game playoffs, it makes the MLS Cup. You may as well not have a playoff, as far as I'm concerned. If you're going to decide an 8-month regular season based on one game, where anything, you know, of course anything could happen in any game, anything could happen in a series, but one game is really, really hinges on bad bounces, injuries, referees. If you're gonna reduce your entire 8-month season to 90 minutes, you know, why bother? You've made MLS Cup a 2-3 game tournament that's going to be quite easy to win. I disagree with Merritt there fundamentally. The other thing it does is owners in all sports do this. This is not an MLS problem. Owners in all sports, on all North American sports, want to make the championship as random as possible. It's in their interest to make it as random as possible, because that way they can be shitty owners. I'm not saying Paris is a shitty owner, but I'm saying that you can be a shitty owner. You can not spend that much. You cannot have good GMs or coaching and still, like, you know, stumble your way into some kind of trophy every now and then. That's why we see the number of playoff teams increasing in every sport. The NBA and the NHL are now talking. I mean, they have these, you know, 16-team tournaments now. You're now hearing talk in the NBA and the NHL about play-in games, about extra teams in each conference making it in and having some kind of wild card round. Because the more teams you get in, the more teams you give a chance, the less your poor management is going to have an effect on your team's chances to win a title. So making the playoffs even more sort of coin flippy and expanding them and doing all these kinds of things give every club, no matter how poorly managed, and again, I'm not saying the teams are poorly managed, but it gives every club, no matter how poorly managed, more of a chance to sort of rock, paper, your scissors your way to a title. So against it.
By the way, this is when I bring up your wonderful idea of having a group stage in the MLS playoffs.
Group stage.
Where the one seed gets to host all three games and the four seed in each conference has to go on the road for all three and has a higher hill to climb as a result than we currently see.
Playoffs are wonderful. Playoffs are memorable. Playoffs are a great test of a team's ability to master a moment. They create the memories we take with us as sports fans throughout our lives. But they have to be fair. They have to be an extension of a regular season. They have to demand something of a champion. And right now, MLS playoffs don't, and making them even shorter and more random will do so even less. And how did we get onto this tangent?
I don't know, but let's move to a league, England, that does not have playoffs, Premier League.
Teams winning titles in their living room. It's the exact opposite.
And Manchester City has won the English Premier League thanks to Manchester United falling at home to last place West Brom, which was a result I don't think any of us saw coming. And Manchester City has won. They're very deserving. They've set records this season in the Premier League. They may set a few more in the next few games to end the season. But I wanted to ask you about something you posted on Twitter after Man City won, and that was a very cool graphic that you've put together of all the shields, badges, of the English champions going back in time, adding Man City for 2017, 2018. And it got a lot of pickup. I think it's been retweeted 629 times since then. Sid Lowe, the terrific writer in Spain, English guy, retweeted it and said that would make for a cool poster. So think about that. You could franchise.
I don't know. I've done it a couple times before, and it's weird when something gets picked up and when it doesn't. As I've said on this podcast many times, I have no life.
How do you put this thing together, I guess, is my question.
I'm a grown man who walks around his tiny apartment in sweatpants muttering to himself. and so while watching soccer the other day, I just, yeah, I mean, you know, control C, control V, and there it was. It's fun to – I guess I'm a visual learner. I guess it's fun for me to look at the trends, you know, and you see clubs rise and fall, and you could sort of follow it based on the logos. And so, yeah, people seem to dig it.
I don't even know how to do that, though. I mean, like, literally how to put something like that together.
Control C, control V. Yeah, find the logo and paste it. And that's the fun thing is, I can make you one for college basketball if you'd like, or all of Kansas City's pro titles.
That would be a very big one then, unfortunately.
I'll give you a discount.
I mean, you should make money off this, Brian. Franchise this. Make a poster.
I don't think. Well, I can't. I don't own the right. I don't own the logo, so I can't
bootleg
make money off.
I don't know.
Bootleg it. This looks like my flipbook idea. Oh man, we gotta do the flipbook idea. The other funny thing though is that because it's gotten some traction on Twitter, it's really amusing to me how many people make the same joke. I've had 100 people make the there was soccer/football before 1992 joke. You know, like 100 people. And every single one of them thinks they're the wittiest guy out there. And it's just really, really amusing to see the same joke sort of cycle through my timeline. But, you know, people dig it. And, you know, I guess I could do them with all the leagues if I really get desperate for something to do.
I guess the punchline being that there was a time when the Premier League didn't exist.
Oh, right. That's the right. People like on NBC, for example, they said something like, this is Manchester City's third, you know, Premier League title, which is just sort of a
arbitrary BS. I mean,
that is a strange way to put it. But it's just that everybody made the same joke.
I don't understand it when people talk about something being like the fifth time in Premier League history, about something about like a history that doesn't really exist for very long and doesn't really apply because it's this an arbitrary, you know, English soccer has had a top division for.
We're guilty of the same thing in the NFL. People act like there was no. I mean, there was an NFL for, you know, almost 50 years before the Super Bowl was created and branded as such. And people often behave like all of the games and championships and records and things like that occurred before then don't exist. So we're just as guilty of it.
I mean, even last summer, I remember watching Confederations Cup games and they were saying stuff like, this is the third time in Confederations Cup history. And I'm laughing because, like, who cares about Confederations Cup history?
I mean, it is a tournament. It's a little different. It's a little different. I mean, it's not a rebranded thing from another thing, I guess. But you know, I want people like growing up, it always bothered me when people ignored, you know, the Redskins 1937 and 1942 champ. I mean, Sammy Baugh, man, like that always bothered me, you know, that people just acted like those things didn't exist. There's been football in England for many, many years back to the 1880s or whatever. And it all fit nicely into a little JPEG. And Sheffield Wednesday's on there too, so that's cool too for me to pretend that Sheffield Wednesday is a big club.
So let's stay in Europe. I think it was on this podcast a week ago that you called UEFA Champions League quote boring. Correct?
Did I use that word, or did I just say yawn really loudly?
You might have yawned really loudly. I'm too lazy to actually go back and listen to find out what you said.
Kick whatever was more obnoxious is the thing that I did.
So promptly, we have two of the wildest days in
naturally.
UEFA.
Thank you. You're welcome, everybody. You're welcome.
In UEFA Champions League history, Barcelona 4-1 up on Roma finds a way to not advance. Roma with a storming comeback, 3-0 at Roma. And they advance ahead of Barcelona to the Champions League semifinals.
The Boston Derby.
Where they will face Liverpool, also owned by a Boston-based owner. Which Liverpool, after stunning Man City 3-0 in the first leg, beats them again. at City to advance easily. Mohamed Salah scores again. He's got an amazing number of goals this season, by the way. And
that looping header he just scored the other day off that long ball from the right back. What's his name?
Trent.
Yeah.
Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Just so difficult. So difficult to do. And he just does it with such sort of, he's so smooth. You know, he's sort of a big dude, but he just plays really, really smoothly and efficiently. And he's impressive.
And Real Madrid at home, up 3-0 going into the return leg against Juventus, promptly gives up 3 goals and then sets the stage for one of the most bizarre stoppage time sequences I've ever seen, where there's a penalty called against Juventus, a penalty that looked like the right call to me, and then Gigi Buffon loses his mind with the referee, gets sent off, and Cristiano Ronaldo converts the penalty for Real Madrid to escape a really embarrassing situation and get to the semifinals. I don't know how
you're missing the highlight. You're missing the highlight, which was Buffon after the game saying that Oliver, the referee, had a quote trash can for heart. It's one of the great quotes of all time. Oh my God, I'm going to start crying. An amazing, amazing quote. Like, he should be given, yes, he'll be sanctioned and suspended for the red, but he should also be given some kind of award for that, like the FIFA awards, the UEFA awards before the Super Cup or whenever they do that. It should be like a lifetime quote achievement award. Trash can for a heart. Amazing.
I think that's a great poem that somebody could write.
It's, yeah, or like a country music song.
Yeah, exactly. What got into Buffon here? First off, I was fine with a penalty call. I don't know if Buffon deserved to be sent off in that situation. There was certainly grounds to do it, but I still think that's more of a gray area.
We don't know I mean, maybe it's come out, but speaking now on Monday morning, I don't know what Buffon said.
Yeah, nobody hired a lip reader to find out.
That may matter, right? Yeah. I mean, that may matter. The content may matter, and we may never know what that is. I mean, I've never refereed. It's kind of the one part of the game that I haven't experienced personally or firsthand. I know that I was hard on referees, certainly as a player, but I felt like as a smaller player, I sort of had to be my own advocate because, you know, I was getting, you know, kicked and shoved and fouled so frequently. So I don't know a lot about refereeing. I sympathize with them. What I don't understand is why at every level, it seems, especially the pro level, referees tolerate the what do you want to call it? I guess the term is mass confrontation in MLS, right?
Correct.
I don't know if anyone outside the US or MLS uses that term. But they allow these guys, crowds of them, a throng of them, 6-7, to get up in their face, scream at them, follow them around the field, get in their way. I mean, if someone did that to you in almost any other capacity, those are like you roll up your sleeves. Like that's provocation, right? I mean, that's someone who wants to like get physical with you. That, you know, they're ready to touch, to throw hands and all that stuff. I mean, it's like it's intimidating, and they let the players get away with this. I mean, I don't understand why. And again, ignorance. I've never refereed a minute of my life. I've never taken a referee class. But why don't they say before a game, if you're not the captain and you get in my face, it's a yellow. Done. And I just feel like it would end this lunacy of after every – no referee has ever changed his mind because a player screams at him. It's never happened. And it's just frustrating to watch. I think it takes away from the rhythm of the game. I feel for the referees. No matter how bad the call is, he's not going to change his mind. And they let these guys just get up in their face and waste 5 minutes following them around the field, screaming at them like a bunch of kindergartners. I don't understand it.
Mass Confrontation was actually the name of my MLS fantasy team 1 year.
What'd you do?
I never won. But what I would say is that the stuff that Buffon has been saying in the days since, like, he needs to give it a rest. He's a legend, and I don't want him endangering any of his legendary status by continuing.
Well, we got Trash Can for a Heart.
But that's
a legendary. It's cemented. His legendary status is cemented with that quote.
If you just left it at that, I think he could have kind of walked off, right?
That is a mic drop. Yes, maybe. I think you're probably right. I guess I'm surprised. My point of all that is I'm surprised that, and again, having not more disclaimers, Portland is a well-run team. I don't understand refereeing. All right, just getting that out there. Quote that. But I don't understand why referees just don't like machine gun cards at guys when they're getting in their face and screaming, and you see like the spittle shotgunning from their mouths and their faces are contorted in purple rage, you know, and they just stand there. Like, card all of them. That's the point of having the armband. That's the point of the captain. And I guess Buffon is the captain, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, I guess right. So okay. So there you have, what did he say? You know, was there a bump? Did he say something about Zidane's sister? I mean, who knows? But, you know, I think overall, and in MLS as well, you know, we see games sort of being dragged into the gutter by the mass confrontation and the I don't know. It's just uncouth. I don't enjoy it.
I will say this, that I don't – it. Watching the replay many times, like the Zapruder film, it looked to me – like Buffon only had contact with the referee because somebody ran into him and he kind of was really close to the referee. Maybe I'm reading it wrong, but
yeah, no, and so that's why I'm wondering what he said. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, I don't think unless he threatened the referee, like it's weird. It's like on one hand, maybe it's a bit of an overreaction for the referee to red card them. If he'd given him a yellow, and I don't think he was on a yellow, right? If he'd given him a yellow. Would it have diffused the situation, right? Would it have calmed things down? Would it have let some of the air out of the balloon? I mean, maybe. I don't know. And again, that's why referees train and go through all the things they do to learn how to read those situations. But that doesn't change the fact that overall, they put up with an egregious amount of shit. And if I was a referee, I would not want to be surrounded and screamed at by multiple, you know, the captain. Sometimes you'll see a captain or a referee, a player talking to a referee, and they're having a conversation, and then like three of the guy's teammates will run over and start waving their hands in the air. Like, I would just card all those dudes, every single one of them. Like, I'm talking to your guy right now. Get out. Card, card, card.
If there are any listeners, by the way, who want to record a country music song, Trash Can of a Heart, we will play it on the podcast. I would gladly play that on the podcast.
I may be guilty of that at this point as well. They have a trash can for a heart.
Lastly, let's talk about our friends at FIFA, who are providing lots of good material lately. One of those things being that at the CONMEBOL conference in Buenos Aires last week, at the Hilton Buenos Aires, which is...
You probably stayed at.
I have. It's also, if you see... the movie Nine Queens, great Argentine film. Large parts of it take place in the Hilton Buenos Aires, which is in Puerto Madero. I think there's also been a lot of shady CONMEBOL stuff that's happened there over the years. It's also where I went to the press conference for Diego Maradona's testimonial back in 2001. But anyway, down at the CONMEBOL conference, they made a big show of CONMEBOL supposedly asking FIFA to expand the 2022 World Cup in Qatar from 32 to 48 teams to basically go through expansion 4 years earlier than planned. Supposedly, this is actually being pushed by Gianni Infantino and FIFA, and CONMEBOL is just the method by which this got proposed. There was another story that came out that in the New York Times from their very good reporter, Tariq Panja, that there has been a $25 billion offer from some Middle Eastern folks, I think, or maybe was it Chinese, for the Club World Cup to be expanded. And FIFA would basically let these guys from Saudi or something run this new.
I didn't even know there was $25 billion.
Oh, that's like pocket change to some of these folks
like
in the Middle East.
Collectively, I didn't realize there was that much money just in existence.
So what do you make of these ideas, expanding the World Cup in 22 in a very tiny country and $25 billion for the Club World Cup?
Well, like we said, right? I mean, it's within everyone's interest to expand. I mean, well, let's be honest. The real issue is, can we get 48 teams for this summer? If you're going to move it forward, let's just move it forward to June. Russia, have you seen Russia's friggin' enormous? Like, there is plenty of room there for 48 teams, and I think we could push this through. I think we can. I think there'd be enough interest from some wealthy and influential global football power brokers in 2 to 3 countries that I can think of, maybe that would be interested in making this happen. Why not? I mean, the tradition and sanctity and purity of the square 32 team bracket, it's been exploded at this point. It doesn't matter, right? So screw it. Let's do it in June. 48 teams.
That's a novel idea. I also think you might as well go to 64 if you're at 48, which we no doubt will do.
In Russia again. Russia is a planet by itself, and you could easily, I mean, just from like Google Street viewing parts of Moscow, like there are so many roads in Moscow where I feel like it would take me an entire day to cross a street. Like, it's just enormous. So you could easily do a 48 team World Cup. I mean, they may as well, right? I mean, if I don't know how Qatar logistically can do 48, but I don't know how it can do 32. And maybe this is a political move to, like, you know, they're having some squabbles with some of their neighbors around the Gulf. So maybe this is a handout to, you know, Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Bahrain and a couple of, you know, throw some games their way. It's hard to argue when they say, well, it's about expanding opportunity and it's about, you know, increasing revenue that we're going to then plow back into the game and in countries that need the money. It's about having more people attend the sport's biggest party. It's about giving new countries a chance to dream, and look what expanding the Euros did for Iceland and blah. You know, it's just one tournament. I mean, it's hard to argue against it. It really doesn't bother me, to be honest. The only thing that I don't like about the format is the way the three team group allows for sort of teams to massage results in the third game in order to ensure their passage. I mean, that's the problem. There's actually a technical flaw with that kind of competition, because one team will have finished its games and will sit by idly while the other two can play to a draw on purpose or play to a certain result on purpose in order to ensure they go through, and that's screwed up. But
yeah, I agree with that. I mean,
who cares? It doesn't bother.
We should also explain, like, why this is happening. And Gianni Infantino needs more money to come into FIFA to fulfill the promises that he's made, which is basically straight out of the Sepp Blatter playbook, which is to promise a lot more money to each of the national federations around the world, for whom that FIFA money is, for most of those countries, their main source of income. For soccer in the country, and unfortunately over the years for a lot of putting that money in people's pockets.
I was going to say, that's a lot of backyard pools right there, and that 48-team World Cup.
And so, you know, FIFA needs sponsors. FIFA needs bigger World Cups to have more games, to sell more TV rights and advertising and all of those tickets and all those things. We've heard for a while now, too, Infantino wants to expand the FIFA Club World Cup, which...
Oh, this is such a stupid idea. This is the dumb idea.
Well,
right?
I don't know. I mean, like, it would replace the Confederations Cup, which, as we talked about earlier, nobody cares about.
That is true.
And, you know, if you have like an expanded Club World Cup with the best players and 16 European teams in it, that's what Infantino wants to see happen once every 4 years, so that FIFA can make a lot more money off the club game instead of just UEFA or CONMEBOL.
I think that's what it's about. I mean, it's about the pissing contest between FIFA and UEFA and Charlie Stelitano about who's going to control sort of the potential future revenue of club soccer. The problem with the quadrennial, I agree. I mean, the FIFA Confederations Cup can go away tomorrow and no one will miss it. But club soccer is an annual exercise. You know, the rhythm of the club game is so much different from the international game. It's a weekend to weekend, you know, annual thing. There's a champion each year. You know, playing squads evolve, coaches move around. You know, teams get promoted and relegated or whatever it is that they do. There's a century plus of annual rhythm to the club game. And so a quadrennial tournament to me is not in keeping with that. It's disruptive. It's confusing. It's meaningless. I mean, you're telling me that the Champions League winner or the Libertadores winner or the CCL winner is going to then play in a tournament they qualify for 3 years later. the team will be entirely fundamentally different by then. It doesn't mean anything. I like the Club World Cup as it is, and I think that the fact that it hasn't caught on as much as FIFA would like is largely, and no offense to these places, but stop having it in Japan. Stop playing it in the middle of the freaking night every year. Bring it to the Americas. Bring it to Europe. It's you win your continent. That same year, you play for a world championship that I think is meaningful, that I think teams should want to win, and many of them do. And it keeps with the rhythm of the club game. If you're not getting the TV rights money and attendances and sponsorships you want, stop holding it on Venus. You know, and they do this every year. I've watched the Club World Cup final at 3 a.m. so many times. I can't understand why it hasn't been in the U.S. I can't understand why it hasn't been in Brazil or Argentina. Play it in France or Germany or Spain.
It has been in Brazil, by the way, my man. I don't know if you remember one of the first FIFA World Cups.
Like in 2000.
It was the year that Man United agreed to play in it and did not play in the FA Cup.
Yep. Well, tell me if I'm wrong, but that was an expanded like group stage, multiple game. You know, the Club World Cup as it is now is quick. You know, I think the South American and European teams, you play a semifinal, you play a final, and you're out. Having it be longer is too disruptive, is too weird. At the same time, and I'll finish with this, at the same time, when clubs, and I think guys from Juve and Bayern and a couple other teams have said this, well, there's just too many games. Well, but it's on you. It's on you as well. If you're concerned about players' health, and I'm obviously not the first person to say this, but if you're concerned about players' health and players, you know, training sort of frequency and regimen, then you can cut back games too. Everyone's coming to the U.S. this summer to play these games, right? Everybody. And I guess a lot of the World Cup guys won't come. But stop having league cups and two-legged cups and super cups and all this nonsense and extraneous bullshit, and do your part so that then you can go to the FIFA on the high ground and say, look, the annual Club World Cup, it keeps with the rhythm of the sport. It's quick and easy. It could be a big deal because it's quick, because it's kind of special. And instead of doing it in Abu Dhabi, you know, let's do it in Madrid. Let's do it in New York. Well, I guess it's December. You can't do it. Let's do it in Miami. Let's do it in Buenos Aires, that kind of thing. And they just haven't done everything they can to make it bigger. And doing a 24-team tournament every 4 years is ludicrous. It makes no sense to me.
So I am going to strongly disagree with you, which I rarely do.
Doesn't happen that often. Bring it.
And say, why not have the big, fancy, once every 4 years Club World Cup in the summer, or at least the Northern Hemisphere summer, and still on the other 3 years have the kind of current Club World Cup where you have just, you know, the champions from each continent.
Are you inventing that out of thin air as a possibility, or was that something that was discussed? I thought it was one or the other.
I don't know if it is one or the other. In fact, I don't think nobody knows what's what.
Yeah, like, fair enough. Like, actually, right. That's what, like Infantino said, he couldn't disclose the names of these bidders to even like the FIFA leadership because he was under some kind of seal or NDA or some nonsense.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. But I mean, like, people are pulling this stuff out of their butts, but I'm doing the same thing. But I am saying,
I would be more in favor with that. But again, it still kind of boggles the mind that teams would be qualifying for a tournament 3-4 years, a club team 3 or 4 years. Plus, what
you're
happens?
No. You're not qualifying 3 years out. I assume you're taking the continental champ, the most recent continental champion from each continent, plus like a few other teams.
But the quadrennial tournament would be the last four continental champions. The last four. The proposal that I read,
yeah,
was that there were 24 clubs in this new tournament, right. 12 from Europe, the four recent Champions League winners, the four recent Champions League runners-up or runner-ups. I don't know how you pluralize that.
Attorneys general.
Definitely with an apostrophe. Definitely pluralize it with an apostrophe because that's how we speak English now. And then the four recent Europa League winners.
Huh.
And those are your 12. Now, there's no chance. When I called the Champions League boring, it was because it's the same teams over and over. And so there's no chance that of those 12 teams, you're not going to have some doubling up. So I have no idea what their plan is for that. And then you'd have to have playoffs for in Asia and Africa and CONCACAF. It's just it's overly complicated and unnecessary. And we're not lacking for football. We're not lacking for it. And I would like to see FIFA and the confederations try to make the competition as it exists now more meaningful and visible and in front of people than blowing it up and creating this bloated mammoth albatross piece of nonsense.
Speaking of bloated and mammoth, did you realize that Chuck Blazer is the father of the FIFA Club World Cup as well?
I knew he was the Gold Cup guy. I did not realize that well, good for him. Good for him. Good for him. Because for a long time, the Club World Championship was contested only by, you know, starting in the 60s or whenever, was contested only by South American and European teams.
Right.
So if Chuck is the one, whatever his motivation was, if Chuck is the one who got everyone a seat at that table, then cool. You know, Manchester United is the only English club for all of England's history and the powerhouse nature of their clubs, the marketing machines that they are, the talent that they stockpile, the number of times English clubs have won the European Cup. We could do a little tweet graphic on that one as well. Manchester United is the only English club that can claim to have been a world champion. They've done it twice.
And I'm waiting for you to add, as you always do, that Jovan Kuroski is the only American male ever to be a world champion in soccer, correct?
That is what I believe. I think someone told me one time that there was like a guy in the U-17 Mexico, one of the U-17 Mexico teams that won the U-17 World Cup, was born in California or something like that. You're like, God damn it. Like, no offense to that guy, but there's always that guy.
Okay,
right?
So only American male at senior level.
Senior, right. So I don't know. I don't think I ever, if I did the research, I have forgotten because it was a while ago. But yes, Jovan is the only senior American male to have been a world champion. He came on as a sub for Dortmund when they won the Club World Cup in 1997 against whatever team they played.
It's good to know.
Cool. It's a cool piece of trivia.
All right, man. Well, this has been fun. I am out next week, but let's come back with abandon in 2 weeks.
Depends on how your Icelandic root canal goes, doesn't it?
Exactly. Talk to you later, man. Thanks for listening to the Planet Football Podcast. I'd like to thank Brian Strauss, as well as everyone at Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Please, if you like the pod, tell your friends, subscribe, like, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help the cause if you do. And check out the 30-minute Planet Football video show hosted by me and Luis Miguel Echegaray on SITV. That's available on Amazon and now on FuboTV. Recent guests include Becky Sauerbrunn, John Strong, Kay Murray, and Stuart Holden. See you next time.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.